Welcome in, everyone, to the 62nd episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty Podcast.
We're seven away.
We are your hosts, Toby and Colin. Toby, how's your week been?
It's been really great. Last day of school tomorrow, and then it's on to a heavy regime of push-ups and sit-ups for me.
Ah, okay. Yeah,
that's... I'm training.
This week, we're going to continue our divisional deep dive series with the AFC North, meaning the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Baltimore Ravens,
Boo.
The Cleveland Browns,
Boo.
And the Cincinnati Bengals. And this, of course, is a division that is close to Toby's heart, as he is a big Steelers fan. As always, make sure to keep up with everything we've got going on Twitter, at Deep Dive Dynasty, and interact with us on Reddit. I'm often posting on Dynasty FF over there, so definitely check out our threads. We're always posting every week there. Toby, let's start off, and we're going to go by who did the best in the division last year, and arguably their season didn't end the best, but the first team up is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Obviously, you've got head coach Mike Tomlin and offensive coordinator Matt Canada. So the only thing to really talk about here with these coaches, I would say, is Matt Canada, because Mike Tomlin, you pretty much know what you have. You know how he's going to run his offense. You know he likes one running back, for example. He's not a committee type of guy. But what's interesting, I would say, is the implementation of Matt Canada and the offense that he wants to run. And I would say the two things that he really brings to the table throughout his career that I could see him implementing early in the Steelers offense that you haven't really seen before is, first of all, he likes a lot of pre-snap motion. And that's something that we didn't see a ton of from this offense. Although it doesn't really change the formations in the end. It's just a way to confuse the defenses and to get players open for Big Ben. And then the other thing that he loves to do is similar to the second team we'll be talking about. He really loves to run power, and that's close to my heart, as in Madden, I really like to run power. So
big Matt Canada fan.
Yeah, big Matt Canada fan. I just think they'll use a lot of tight ends, especially. I think that's a big reason why they drafted Freiermuth this year, is because they can use him in that blocking role. Obviously, they've tried to improve that O-line, and I just think all of that and the new regime that's coming in at OC is going to hopefully be a little better play caller, because I don't think their previous guy was that good. And I think it could help Najee Harris in the running game using the blocking schemes in a slightly different way than we've seen in previous years.
I'm pretty excited about Matt Canada's offense.
Mm-hmm.
Anything somewhat nearer an equilibrium of running and passing in the Steelers will be better. The Steelers, obviously, last year started off 11-0, and it felt, as a Steelers fan, like they were 5-6. They were so fortunate to get out when they did. And if Matt Canada can use this first-round draft pick talent, Najee Harris, to his advantage, I think the offense will not suffer, even with an aging and ailing Big Ben under helm.
Honestly, you kind of already saw Big Ben fall off a decent amount, and that is kind of crazy, because he was still able to distribute the ball, and like you were saying, they started off the year just pumping win after win after win, and it didn't feel like they were the best team in the league.
It was just a defensive kind of
show. Of course,
show.
Yes. They clearly have a great defense, but honestly, Ben was still, I think, playing a lot better than people are giving him credit for. Last year in fantasy, he was the quarterback 13, so somewhat usable. I think if you're in a super flex league, obviously he doesn't have a lot of time left. Any one of these years could be Big Ben's last, and this could definitely be it. But for this year alone, I would absolutely be fine with drafting Ben and having him as my QB2 for most weeks this year. Like, the last few years, obviously other than 2019, he was hurt. If you go back, he actually has never been, other than that 2019 season, worse than the QB19. Like, even if he is down in those higher teens, he's still totally usable as that QB2 in Superflex. So he's a good win now QB2 or 3.
Going to take deep shots. He's going to get the ball in the end zone.
Mm-hmm. And they're also going to build the scheme around him now that he's not that mobile and he doesn't have the huge arm like he used to. They're scheming around that and having the ball get out of his hand really quickly. And I think the main reason why that's super important is because their O-line is ranked 32nd in the league at this point. So
32nd best.
He will be forced to be throwing a lot of those quick passes.
Yeah.
They're going to have to be creative, and I think they can be creative to continue to put him in advantageous situations.
I will also say, no chance that they finish the season as the 32nd best. They have too many new pieces and rookies they've drafted to miss on all of them and stay 32nd.
I would say, as much as I would bet that any team wouldn't stay the 32nd, they're got to be my odds-on favorite. I just don't think they have a ton of talent, and they definitely need to have more. That being said, like, they had their, I think it was their left guard last year, was like a fifth-round pick, and he was a very impressive player. So that's all they need, is to hit on a couple of guys, and they can turn it around quickly. Behind Big Ben on the depth chart, you've got Mason Rudolph. I'm just not that excited about Mason Rudolph's future. He played better last year than he did in 2019 when he was forced into a starting lineup, but that doesn't mean he was good.
No, Mason Rudolph will not start for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Mason Rudolph couldn't start a car. I would sooner play the guy who's behind him.
I would too.
Dwayne Haskins, who is a terrible character to have quarterbacking the Steelers. I hated the move then. I am only warming to it because I'm just forgetting all the vaguely idiotic things he's done. And I think he's going to be better than Mason Rudolph.
I have never been a big Dwayne Haskins guy, not even coming out. I didn't like how immobile he's always been. And for fantasy, that's obviously a huge thing. And I didn't think his passing prowess was good enough to overcome that. Up to this point, that obviously seems true. I do think the Steelers offense is the right type of offense for Dwayne Haskins to succeed. Like, he's basically as mobile as Ben is. He's even more so because it's hard to be much slower, honestly, at this point. And then what he needs is to make a lot of those short passes where he's getting the ball out of his hands quickly, and to have good receivers, which they obviously have around him on the Steelers. So I do think if there is an offense where he could step in and somewhat succeed, this one makes a lot of sense, but I'm still not super excited about him. He's just kind of one of those depth guys that I'm somewhat okay with having at the bottom of my bench, hoping that in a year or two he could find his way onto the field. At wide receiver, they've got a trio of very solid wide receivers. I think their 1, 2, and 3 is very locked in, as well as their number 4, honestly. You have the trio of Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool, and Juju Smith-Schuster. And then you have James Washington, who I think is a clear number 4. Like, the next guy up would be like a Ray McCloud, and he's not going to see the field that much. So you're really just looking at these 4 guys. And Deontay Johnson is the guy that I want, especially for this year, whereas Chase Claypool is more of the long-term upside. And honestly, at this point, I think Juju has become a bit of the forgotten man, although I don't think most of his value is going to come on this Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
So is that the way that you would also order them in Dynasty? Are you going for Deontay before Claypool? Because I feel like that's probably about a 50-50 on which of those two people prefer.
I still want Deontay Johnson over Chase Claypool. And I want him because he separates more on his routes. And I think this is a skill that when he gets older, when he starts losing a step, if he has slightly more separation than Chase Claypool, it's just that slight. For me, it's not 50-50. It's like 55-45. So super slight. I can't get angry at anyone for wanting Claypool, especially because, listen, I love Chase Claypool. He gave me lots of happiness last year. And I expect him to do great things again. Absolute threat. But I think Deontay Johnson being a more refined route runner, I mean, he's only going into year 3, and he's established himself as a crafty guy.
Yeah.
I also think, I've never been a huge James Washington fan. He's really frustrated me. Gotta be one of the best wide receiver 4s in the league.
Like, agree.
Are you kidding me?
He's solid.
He's very solid. He's going to be a contested catch monster at the end of the day. He's not going to have that many balls thrown his way. So I think he's going to capitalize on them.
Mm-hmm. Between the two, Deontay and Chase, I would just say Chase, if one of them is going to separate and become that absolutely elite wide receiver 1, like, you know, a first, second round dynasty startup type of guy, it would be Chase Claypool, who could take another big leap forward. Sure. But I'm still going to prefer Deontay. And then Juju, as I alluded to, I think he's just got this 1 year on the Steelers. I think he's very unhappy with the lack of interest he had around the league, I assume meaning money, because I know Baltimore and Kansas City were both kind of in on him, but likely not giving him the money he wanted. Unsurprisingly, he has a new agent. I just think this is all lining up that he wants to get paid reasonably so, and I don't think he deserves to be a number 3 for a team. So I think he'll be fine this year, but if I'm buying him now, it's much more for the hope that he could get paid and be a much more of a target hog in the future. Then James Washington, as you said, I think decent shot. If Juju does leave, could slide in and be that very solid number 3, assuming the quarterback play is still good enough that they can support three useful dynasty wide receivers. Yeah. Najee Harris, obviously the first round pick of the Pittsburgh Steelers this year, 22nd overall, well documented. We really like Najee Harris. I've been in on him the entire time, my clear RB1 throughout the entire process. And like we said with Mike Tomlin, just historically, they use one guy, especially if that one guy is a very good pass catcher, which is one of Najee's greatest skill sets. I'm super excited for him. I think he is still slightly undervalued in where I'm seeing him go a lot of the time. He just landed himself in the one spot that I think he has very guaranteed production, mm-hmm. and I know he's also got the talent, so even though that O-line is not going to be helping him out a ton, I think he can create a lot on his own, and I don't want to project too far out because I think he's going to be an RB2 this year, possibly even higher. Of course, he has a greater ceiling,
yeah.
and going forward, a lot can change. That O-line can improve. They could find their way into a new quarterback that makes you more excited. There is paths where Najee Harris could have that sky-high ceiling in a couple years.
Najee Harris as well, his pass catching is being hyped up at camp. This man is going to have PPR value.
And totally.
I don't think people are talking about his PPR value enough,
because
he absolutely is going to have checkdown after checkdown after checkdown.
Yeah,
like Ben is a smart enough QB to go, oh, nothing's open, I'm just going to give it to Najee because he can get some.
And it's not like historically Ben hasn't passed a lot to the running back. Clearly have Bell, who caught a ton, and even James Conner had years where he was catching a lot of balls too. Behind Najee, you've got, I would say, one of the more difficult backfields to kind of sift through, because if Najee Harris gets hurt, who is the guy? I really don't know, and I don't think a lot of people do. There's Benny Snell, Anthony McFarland, Kalen Ballage, and Jalen Samuels, and let's be real, not all five of these guys are even making the team.
No.
So
you use the verb sift, but I would prefer the verb rummage, as in rummaging through garbage.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Benny Snell, no.
I'm not excited about any of them. Like, Kalen Ballage went to this team this offseason, signed for very cheap, and I think you can reasonably make the case that he could be the second best running back on this team, just because we haven't seen anything special from Anthony McFarland. He had a nothing rookie season. You have Benny Snell, who I think has proven himself as a plotter.
Yeah.
Jalen Samuels.
Can catch it, can play wildcat.
He's one of the better scat guys. Like, he's just nothing too special. So I just don't really think any of them is a clear lock to step up, but if you're in a deep league, take a shot on any of them. Take a shot on Kalen Ballage. I think he would probably be the cheapest, either him or Jalen Samuels, because if Najee Harris goes down, they're likely not using a committee still.
Yeah.
Who is the guy?
I think the best deep shot, if you're like, okay, I gotta grab someone, you grab Anthony McFarland. Anthony McFarland's got to be one of the faster running backs in the NFL.
I think he's probably the most expensive, so I would probably agree he's the most likely.
There's a chance he has this explosive week and, you know, gets an 80-yard touchdown run, and they're like, whoa, we need this guy in more packages. We're going to try and get him out in the wings, and like, he could succeed. But the reason why the Steelers went in the first round to get a running back is because they looked at the running backs they had, and they said, no, this is our number one place where we need to improve.
Yeah, this is just a rough
They could have gone O-line. They went running back because this is their number one area they need to improve.
At tight end, they have Eric Ebron, who is still on the team. And then this year in the second round, another draft pick that I think raised some eyebrows. We kind of knew the running back was coming, but it's still odd to go in the first round. And then the second round, no one expected them to go tight end with Pat Freiermuth.
Baby Gronk!
As I mentioned before, I think Pat Freiermuth was brought in especially early to be used as a blocker, and I think especially in those power formations that they're going to do, he's going to be very useful in that role, and he was good in that role in college. So that's one of the reasons they went after this particular tight end. But long term, I think that he has quite a lot of upside because he is also a very good receiver. He is the clear tight end two in this class, and he's someone that I'm reasonably excited down the line. I just don't think he's going to do much more than maybe a couple plays this year where he's faking as a blocker and he'll spring out to catch a touchdown or two. That's pretty much all I expect out of Freiermuth year one.
I can see him catching enough touchdowns for Pittsburgh fans to start getting really excited, like 5 or 6.
I think he could have, potentially like a Cole Kmet type year.
Sure, but I absolutely agree with you. He's going to help out the O-line more than he's going to help out the aerial assault.
Mm-hmm. And Ebron, at this point, is someone I'm just not that excited about. Maybe if you're in a tight end premium league that has, you know, everyone starting two or something, then he's usable, but
it's tough because I still think he's going to be extremely relevant as a tight end this year.
I don't
think they're going to let Pat Freiermuth kind of get into his own this year.
He's going to be more running. I just think he's at best fifth in the target distribution on a team that I just don't think Ben's going to throw for that many yards, that with three very good wide receivers, possibly four, and also Najee Harris catching a lot. I just don't think the tight end position will be catching much this year from the Pittsburgh Steelers.
I smell an Eric Ebron bet before the season. It's coming. Sure. Deep Dive Dynasty listeners, an Eric Ebron prop bet will be made.
That's fine. Next up, we're going to go with the Baltimore Ravens. You, of course, have John Harbaugh and Greg Roman calling the plays for this offense. Greg Roman's been there for a few years.
And really good at calling plays.
Interestingly, he kind of lost his fan base a little bit last year. Like, Ravens fans were really mad at him last year. And every one of the previous seasons, he was very hyped up as, you know, a future head coach. And he's, you know, doing so much. That just goes to show you the difference between like a Lamar MVP type season and then like a somewhat down year, and how fickle fan bases can be, because definitely they turned on him, I would say, pretty quickly. Greg Roman loves mesh, another Madden favorite of mine. He runs mesh all the time. And also, of course, a ton of designed runs, a ton of running plays. They love RPO. To run RPO, outside zone running with J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards. By far the heaviest run offense in the league, with the Titans only being second. And I think that that will absolutely continue, even though the passing numbers could jump up from 2020. It's still not going to reach, I would say, the heights that you saw in 2019. At the quarterback position, obviously you have Lamar Jackson. And Lamar Jackson, I think, did have a down year last year. He disappointed you for the large majority of the season as a fantasy owner. And then in the last six, seven, eight games, he was kind of back to 2019 Lamar Jackson. I think that Lamar Jackson at this point is a little bit undervalued. And sure, he's not the greatest passer in the world. He needs to improve in that department. But I think it's a little bit overblown that he is, oh, he's just a running back and he can't throw. Like, that 2019 season, he looked very good.
Mm-hmm.
His touchdown percentage was insanely high. And obviously, that just leads everyone to saying, oh, he's going to regress. And of course, he was going to regress. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't still insanely good. He was still throwing for a crazy high amount of touchdowns, a lot of yards per play. And I think that he can find that middle ground between the 2019 and the 2020 season. And I think he's as reasonable a bet as anyone to be the quarterback one again in 2021. He's definitely in that upper echelon for me.
I recently did a mock draft in which I got Lamar Jackson in the seventh round.
It was a redraft, to clarify.
It was a redraft. And I wanted to send personal messages to every other owner saying, wake up. I think Lamar Jackson in Dynasty, if you can get him for an appropriate price, is an absolute buy. Absolute buy. Yes, his rushing numbers will dwindle as his career goes on, but still on a pretty amazing offense at this point. Right now is still an elite rusher. He's got a couple of seasons left in him that he's going to be absolutely breaking matchups for you, and you want that. There are two backups playing behind Lamar Jackson. Trace McSorley, great name, and Tyler Huntley, fine name.
Just not it's good.
It's fine. Yeah. It's not Trace McSorley, though.
There's still a quarterback competition between McSorley and Huntley in this offense. I don't think anyone really knows who's going to be the number two and number three. I expect it to be Tyler Huntley, and I actually think that the odds-on favorite would probably be McSorley, and the reason why I think it is Huntley is the same reason they brought in RG3 last year. They've recently cut him, so he's not a part of the equation anymore, but I basically think that they aren't going to want to completely change the way their offense runs, and their offense right now runs around the rushing ability of Lamar Jackson. So that's why I think Tyler Huntley is more likely to be the backup and more likely you step in if Lamar Jackson goes down, because Tyler Huntley is that elite rusher who's not as much of a passer, whereas McSorley is more your average quarterback. So if I'm going to take a shot on one of these two guys, I would lean Huntley. And I also think, regardless, if Lamar Jackson does go down in this offense, these are one of those backups that is pretty cheap, and in Superflex, if it does happen, if Lamar Jackson does get hurt, you could see a pretty huge spike in value.
The wide receivers for these Baltimore Ravens, there's a lot of them. We'll just start with that first name, Rashad Bateman. How good will Rashad Bateman be in his rookie season? I will say, underwhelming. I don't think he's going to have the number of balls thrown his way that he would like to have an explosive first-year season. Having said that, I think Rashad Bateman's arguably the number one option on this team now. Like, yes, you have Marquise Hollywood-Brown playing behind him, mm-hmm. but Marquise is a very different type of player. I think it's clearly proven he's not going to level up as an NFL player. Like, he's not going to...
We know what he is.
Yeah, we know what he is. He's not going to change his game. And Rashad Bateman obviously has a very different set of skills. You also have Sammy Watkins now as part of the team. And Sammy, I don't really know what to do with other than stay away. I don't want Sammy Watkins shares. Maybe you feel differently about this?
No, not really.
Okay.
Let's stop there before we keep going.
Yeah.
I think Rashad Bateman is the number one from day one.
Okay.
Sure, you sometimes see even a guy like Justin Jefferson who comes in and completely emerged, takes a couple weeks. But if I have to put my money down on who leads this team in receiving yards, maybe besides Mark Andrews, I would go with Rashad Bateman over every single one of these wide receivers, because I do not believe in Hollywood Brown. I definitely do not believe in Sammy Watkins or the rest of this depth chart. I expect that Rashad Bateman will play more as that slot guy. As I said, they run mesh a ton, so you can imagine that he's going to be doing those crossing routes. And I just think the talent that Rashad Bateman brings to the field is so much greater than the other options that Lamar Jackson has to throw to right now. He has the size, he has pretty much everything but speed on Hollywood Brown, and the rest of their depth chart has either been somewhat underwhelming younger players or, you know, guys like Sammy Watkins, who I just don't think at this point has anywhere near the juice that he had early in his career. So I'm all for going to get Rashad Bateman right now. I'm sure he doesn't have the ceiling that a lot of these other rookies have. But when you're just comparing him, now he's in the league, not just against the other rookies, but against players in general, I think this is a pretty cheap wide receiver that I see a clear path to being the number one on his team.
I agree.
Marquise is going to be that high average depth of target, burning down the field. He's clearly the fastest guy of this list.
Mm-hmm.
And his target share is going to go down significantly, even if Rashad Bateman was not their first round pick. I think guys like Sammy Watkins coming in, they just needed anyone else to throw to, basically. So I just don't think Hollywood Brown has nearly the value he had even last year. And even last year, he wasn't that great to have. And below him, you've got Sammy Watkins. He might be somewhat useful this year, but he's just not someone I'm looking for in Dynasty.
He'll have some blow-up games, and apart from that, he'll be unpredictable and frustrating to own.
Totally. You've got Devin Duvernay then, who has actually gotten a little bit of camp hype just in the way that he has stepped it up. We've obviously seen him essentially only used as a returner in the NFL game.
Yep.
We did like him a lot as a prospect coming out last year, but he just definitely disappointed me in what he was able to do.
John Harbaugh was also extremely excited to have Devin Duvernay on the team. It was an odd, not a bust for a rookie, but I mean, he did not impact the team other than one impressive highlight reel run back.
But hey, let's be real. Maybe Jim Harbaugh was super pumped up that he just got an amazing kick returner.
Yeah.
Although, like, that is absolutely possible.
This is nitpicking, but I believe it's John Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh, I believe.
The other guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, guy. My bad. Oops. Next up, you've got Miles Boykin, another, I believe it was a day two pick. I think he was a third rounder a few years ago who hasn't really jumped off the page. He has made a few select highlights. He is a very good athlete, but he's not very refined to the position. So I think he's ideally the guy that you bring in occasionally for a jump ball or to burn down the sideline and try to go up over a defender. That's about it. I don't expect a lot of high target share. He's kind of like a Donovan Peoples-Jones. That's another guy we'll be talking about later. He's that type of player. Then you've got Tylan Wallace. Was a somewhat late pick, fourth round this year. So as much as we kind of liked him as a prospect, maybe not as high as others, he is fairly likely to just fall to the wayside in this depth chart, because if you're not getting the draft capital, your ceiling is definitely incredibly capped at this point. And also, just as a side note, they still have that James Proche, who was a late round pick, I believe it was last year, and had some hype, but again, this has now become a somewhat large depth chart, even if it doesn't have a ton of talent high end. I feel like this team's got to have one of the best wide receiver sixes in the league, like... Honestly,
sure.
I just don't think James Proche will find himself ever on the field, no, given the guys in front of him. J.K. Dobbins is someone that I think we need to talk about a decent amount, because the Dynasty community is divided. Is this guy an RB1?
No.
I tend to agree, but it's close.
I agree it's close, and I understand why he can be divisive. It's a difficult thing to prognosticate. He's not an RB1 because Lamar Jackson runs too much, and Gus Edwards is too good as a secondary option. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is my quick and easy answer for it.
If you guys want another podcast to listen to, go look up J.G. Zacharyson's The Late Round Podcast. He did a study very recently about the impact that rushing quarterbacks have on the weapons around them. And it does go to show that, sure, there are the narratives like, oh, you know, defenders are going to be distracted on these RPOs, which guy do they tackle? The impact is clear that having a rushing quarterback does take away somewhat from the players around him. And yeah, it is obvious that J.K. Dobbins and Gus Edwards have a third incredible runner in their backfield who is going to be taking away some of the touchdowns, some of the chunk plays. Lamar Jackson is great. I do still think that J.K. Dobbins is also great, though. Mm-hmm. There has been a ton of camp hype about how he is poised to emerge as a receiver, and that is something that's really exciting for me, because in college, he was a very good receiver. If this isn't some new skill he needed to develop, he's a really good receiver if they decide to use him in that way. The argument will be, though, Lamar Jackson, this offense, they don't pass the running back, so it doesn't matter. It's just all talk. And it absolutely could be all talk. We are in this rookie camp, early OTAs, all that. Some of these reports are just some BS. But I will say, think of the exact same narrative. Cam Newton never passes to the running backs. He'll never pass to Christian McCaffrey. He always rushes it himself. Why would he dump it off? It's the exact same argument we saw a bunch of years ago. And then if you have a good enough talent, you just pass it to Christian McCaffrey because he's really good. And I think that's what you could see out of J.K. Dobbins. So that is the one area where I think he could especially separate from Gus Edwards, is if they actually decide to pass to him a little bit more this year, I think he could really excel and hit that RB1 ceiling. Gus Edwards, though, is undervalued, in my opinion, and he's someone that realistically I think will be startable at times. And he also, of course, has that handcuff upside, because if J.K. Dobbins goes down, it's Gus Edwards and Justice Hill in this backfield, and he's going to get a ton of rushing work, and I think you can instantly start him week in and week out. So he's that type of player that, of course, he's going to get the 35 to 40% of the backfield because he is the backup in the offense, but he's a good runner, and this team trusts him. They paid him this year because they want him to be a significant part of the offense. So I'm all in on going to get Gus Edwards this year. I mentioned him. Justice Hill's also there. He was used a little bit in the passing work last year. I hope that Justice Hill does not take away some of the receiving game from J.K. Dobbins, because I don't think they should, but it's possible they keep bringing him in, as disappointing as that would be. At tight end, of course, you got Mark Andrews. He could be the biggest target on this team. He, I would say, is the clear favorite to lead the team in receiving touchdowns. He's that weapon that Lamar is absolutely comfortable going to. I do think that as the target competition grows for this team, Mark Andrews may have seen his best season we will see in 2019. I could see that being the peak of his career, so I would take a guy like TJ Hawkinson over him right now in Dynasty, so I think he might be a tiny bit overvalued, but clearly there isn't that many really good tight ends, and he's one of them. He's going to lead the tight end position, be one of those top five guys in touchdowns and receiving yards. He's just one of those very solid guys. Only half of the teams in your league are actually very happy with who they have at tight end, and if you have Mark Andrews, you can be one of those.
Yep.
Behind him, you've got Nick Boyle, who is a blocking tight end.
Blocking tight end. He'll be on the field, actually. Mm-hmm. Like,
probably quite a bit.
60 to 70% of snaps, I would say.
He did have a pretty gruesome injury last year, but assuming he's back, he will be involved in this offense.
And Josh Oliver, coming, I believe, in the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he actually was traded for this year, and the trade was a conditional 2022 seventh, and the condition is if Josh Oliver makes the team. That's all that needs to happen. So basically, it was the Jags cutting him, but it's like, hey, if he makes your team, you can give us your seventh.
So the Ravens, if they sign him to the team, they have to give up a seventh.
They have to give up their seventh.
Very
if
interesting.
If he doesn't make it, then they just keep
their
seventh.
I did not know this wrinkle, and it interests me greatly.
Yeah, weird trade. I think, actually, Josh Oliver is a little bit undervalued.
Yeah, he's decent.
He is a player who was a pretty good receiver out of college, and he has been in the league for two seasons now. He was actually a third-round pick. So just in terms of asset management, to go from a third-round pick, give him 2 years in the league where he got pretty significantly injured in both. So the Jags never really saw him. And then to trade him for a conditional seventh feels like terrible roster management to me. But I don't know. Maybe they see him with a bad attitude around camp or something. But it feels like a good shot to take for the Ravens. He's incredibly cheap, and only a couple years ago he was a third-round pick. So really, it just depends. If he's healthy, I think he can probably make the team, just kind of be that handcuff for Mark Andrews in the offense, and maybe he has some upside if Mark Andrews ever went down.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to a shockingly decent team.
The Cleveland Browns.
Mm-hmm.
They are relevant once again. Head coach Kevin Stefanski, he's sticking around. Offensive coordinator Alex Van Pelt.
Sounds like the name of a vampire to me.
It does. Alex Van Pelt has come out of his dungeon once again for another season of being the offensive coordinator of the Cleveland Browns. I don't have a lot of insight to add in terms of the head coach and OC. What I think is interesting that Stefanski has done is operationalize his weapons as best as he can.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel he has a signature scheme or fit to this offense. He's looking at guys such as Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt and going, let's get both of them the ball as much as possible. He's got OBJ and Jarvis Landry. Okay, we are essentially going to run our team through these talented pieces.
And
it's working.
Also, if you look at just their roster construction, below Odell and Landry, they don't have a ton of wide receivers, whereas they do have a very solid tight end room. So they run a lot of 12 personnel. It helps with their running game. It just makes a lot of sense. I think you'll see essentially exactly what you saw last year again out of the Cleveland Browns.
For quarterback, Baker Mayfield.
Mm-hmm.
Baker Mayfield, always an interesting debate in redraft, and I would say more interesting to debate in Dynasty.
I agree. He's
how much tough to do value. You want Baker? Do you want him at all? Do you covet him? And I do not want Baker Mayfield as much as potentially some of your other league mates because of this drop-off in wide receiver caliber. Once OBJ and Jarvis Landry go, Baker Mayfield, he'll be a wily veteran at this point. He'll have proven himself. He'll have accolades. I do not think he has the longevity and decision-making prowess to be fantastic as an asset year-round. There are going to be times when you are going to be looking at him versus another streaming option and are going to choose the streaming option. So for that reason, I actually would vouch for starting to trade Baker Mayfield if he starts having a great season this year, because he's insanely talented in some respects. But I worry that he's too unpredictable to have as a long-term value.
I basically view Baker in the way that I do someone like Kirk Cousins. He hasn't actually produced even to that level as of yet, but last year was a big step up for Baker. Just in an NFL sense, his touchdown to interception ratio was much better, all of that. But you know, this isn't a guy with that rushing floor or ceiling that's going to come with a much higher level of athleticism.
Yeah.
But he is a part of this pretty solid offense right now, and I think he's the type of guy that you can lock in as a starter for the next group of years. He's just that player that I would be okay with as my quarterback 2 in a super flex and be very happy to have as my quarterback 3.
Yeah, if he's your QB 3, then you're doing it right. You can take Baker Mayfield against the New York Jets. Sorry, New York Jets. I still think you're bad, apparently. The first example that came to mind.
Their defense isn't so bad.
Their defense actually isn't so bad.
But Baker is kind of interesting in that he is very divisive. There probably are other owners in your league that think that Baker is absolutely trash. I swear that him doing a bunch of commercials and all of that actually leaves an impression on people. He seems to be very generally disliked. But then he has his staunch defenders who really, really like him as well. So he's the type of player that you just have to find the right trade partner.
Yeah.
And I think you could get a huge variance of different values by going from person to person on what they expected of Baker. I just think he's that fine, pretty safe guy. Because honestly, if you're looking at quarterback 2s in the league at this point, you're looking at a bunch of older players that you don't know how long they have around, or you have young guys that you're unconfident if they'll still have their job in a couple years. Baker feels to me like the guy who will still have his job in a couple years.
Oh, he absolutely will.
Mm-hmm. So he just has that security that if you want to lock him in as your quarterback too, that's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've mentioned this before, I think, in previous episodes, but Case Keenum is the backup here, and he is just someone that I think could step into this offense and do almost just as well as Baker does
he's
in
good.
The offense. He's just one of the better backups in the league, in my opinion. So he's not going to step in and be a top 10 quarterback, but he has that upside of if Baker ever goes down, he's going to perform to the same level and be that mid to low quarterback too, who's absolutely startable in Superflex.
Case Keenum, if you've ever watched Hard Knocks, and no, I'm not talking about Case Keenum's beautiful, beautiful wife, okay?
You're a weirdo.
Case Keenum, he has accolades, and he's going to be able to go in and learn a system and fill in a pinch. In fact, Case Keenum filled in for Baker Mayfield when he got benched in a game last season.
Yeah, his only game
His only game, and he came in and he was fine.
Yeah.
I'm not going to extrapolate that sample size to any extent, but I do think he's one of the better backups in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if the Steelers had Case Keenum, I'd be great. Someone who can just game manage and be safe and get the ball to the people we want.
We were talking about Baker being divisive. No one can agree on the valuation of this player. It's Odell Beckham Jr. So, Toby, how do you rank Odell Beckham Jr. in Dynasty right now?
Well, I read an article that cited Jarvis Landry, who said, Odell looks great.
Mm-hmm. And I saw that report.
Well, this has changed my mind. It's just so hard to not read that stuff and be so cynical. I don't care about what you... I think OBJ has obviously lost a step in terms of his route running abilities. I think you need look no further than his end around play against Dallas last year to go, oh my goodness, like he is still an elite athlete. He still has the sprinting ability to outrun absolutely any linebacker in the league easily, and almost any corner in the league easily. Yeah. Because of his freak athleticism, you cannot malign this man to a wide receiver three designation.
I agree.
I do not think he deserves that. However, I do not think he will reach wide receiver one status again in his career.
I would agree with that as well. Basically, Odell has the name that people who are really casual about fantasy might be still overvaluing him.
Yeah.
But if you look at startup draft ADP at this point, he's going late enough that as long as he is not slotted in as your wide receiver two where you need some security, like honestly, then I would maybe go to Landry instead. But if you have some other wide receivers and you're looking for that upside, Odell reportedly was hurt all last year and hasn't been healthy for a few years now. He's coming off a surgery, and yeah, the report comes out that he's looking much better now that he's healthy finally. That could absolutely be OTA narrative BS, but he's the type of guy who has that ceiling that you can get so late in startups right now that I think he's worth the shot. Jarvis Landry is obviously the wide receiver too, the only other guy you will see on the field almost all the time, and Landry for a while has been a decent buy, a very secure player to have on your team. I think this team will pass enough that these two wide receivers will see a good amount of volume, but they won't have that elite ceiling. So Landry is a perennial value, in my opinion. And I think, as I was just saying, he's the type of guy that maybe you've gone really running back heavy, you've secured your quarterbacks in Superflex and your startup. Landry can be that guy that, oh, this wide receiver two is incredibly cheap, and I know that I can start him and get a good amount of targets year in and year out. So that's basically how I view Landry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just agree.
The rest of their depth chart, they've got Anthony Schwartz, who...
Rookie.
Wasn't one of our favorites. Basically, he brings speed, and he's that archetype of player that doesn't project for a ton of targets. He was obviously a third-round draft pick, though. Then behind him, you have Rashard Higgins, who has been a valuable role player for years, but he's not really someone you want in Dynasty.
I think he's a great guy to have for an NFL offense, not good to have for your fantasy team. Mm-hmm.
And then you have Donovan Peoples-Jones, who I already equated to Miles Boykin. He's going to make some splash plays. He's a great athlete, but for some reason, even through college, he could never secure enough targets, receptions to have very good fantasy value. I don't expect him to change that now with year two in the league.
I agree. He had that one amazing go-ahead touchdown.
Oh, he'll have some of those this year, too.
DPJ! Yeah.
Yeah, he will. But he'll have his highlights.
The running back room of the Cleveland Browns, we've alluded to two of these guys, Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Chubb has people in love with this man. He wears no gloves. He wears no finger tape. Okay.
I like him. He's a great player.
You can't help but like his running style and the way he absolutely breaks away and grinds through tackles. He's just a fantastic athlete. He might be one of the better, just heads down tough runners that the NFL has right now.
Yeah.
And that's why people like him so much. That's why he's so effective in fantasy. And he's one of the only running backs where he has that elite competition of Kareem Hunt operating there in the backfield with him, and you're still not too concerned about the numbers he's going to put up.
Yeah, I still expect Nick Chubb to be a running back one this year, and I expect Kareem Hunt to be a running back two this year. They're just both usable guys, very valuable guys. They'll both be on the field, and they're both very good.
I could actually see Kareem Hunt taking a step back this year. Watching back some of the games where you have Chubb and Hunt, obviously Kareem Hunt is fantastic and is a good pass catcher. Nick Chubb is too good a pass catcher for him to not start getting more opportunities. And I wonder just how much the pendulum will sway if Nick Chubb starts taking advantage of the opportunity he gets through the air. I could see Kareem Hunt taking a step backwards, whereas I think Nick Chubb can only get better.
I wouldn't bet as much on that. I would say his counting stats overall, because Nick Chubb was hurt last year, he could go down from last year. But when they're both healthy, I think the way that you see them committed to the split, I just expect Kareem Hunt to be used enough in the rushing game, enough in the passing game, that he'll still be very good.
He's too good.
That's the thing, is if he was a less talented player, it would seem a lot more possible, but you honestly just watch both of them and they're both very good.
If it wasn't for one scandal, he'd be the clear RB1 of the Chiefs.
100%.
Like, he's an RB1. It's just his history.
Mm-hmm. And then Demetric Felton is, in my opinion, the clear number three guy you would want in Dynasty at this point. He's much more of that Kareem Hunt type guy. Coming into the draft, he was one of those wide receiver / running back type of players, and he's a fairly talented guy. I think he, in a year or two when Kareem Hunt's contract is up, could slide into that role, so he has some upside in the future, but because of these two pretty elite assets in front of him, I don't expect him to see much in year one.
Sorry, Mr. Felton.
Then at tight end, as I said before, they have three very solid players. They've got Austin Hooper, who is likely to be the most targeted of the three this year, but doesn't have as high of a ceiling because he's not an incredible athlete, and he's a bit older than some of these other two guys with a lot more excitement. So I'm not super hyped up to have Hooper as my tight end one for my dynasty league, but he is pretty safe if you're going for one of those lower end, you know, bottom of the barrel. If you're not having one of those eight guys, he could easily be your ninth. Like, after that, it kind of drops off and he's as good of a shot to take as any.
Yep.
Then you got Harrison Bryant, who I think is very undervalued and has a good future in the NFL. He impressed me in limited work in 2020, and he also was very solid out of college. So I think as Njoku leaves at the end of this year, and because it's inevitable.
So crazy that Njoku's still on the team.
And eventually Hooper gets usurped or leaves. I just think that Harrison Bryant could find his way to be this tight end one, and right now you'd be getting him very cheap.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Njoku, like we were saying, he has been wanting out and totally fine and back and forth and different reports all the time. As of right now, he says he's passed all that and he's perfectly happy. I think he's just going to ride out this year and probably end up on a team with a very limited depth chart next year. So at this point, because he's kind of like Chris Herndon, he hasn't produced in all the years despite the hype out of college.
Yeah.
He's probably a worthy stash just because an athlete and receiver of that talent could find himself some work if he lands in a better situation next year.
In the age of player empowerment, it's bizarre that Njoku hasn't found a way to finagle out of the Browns and just hop onto any other roster.
It is weird. Super he's stuck weird. On their roster. You're right. The Cincinnati Bengals is the fourth team we're going to be talking about. And all four of these teams, they've got some excitement to them. The head coach, Zach Taylor, is going to be running the same offense with offensive coordinator Brian Callahan. It's basically going to be the offense you've seen already. Zach Taylor has a specific style that's much more of that college spread offense. And you need three good wide receivers to run a spread offense. He's got him. Joe Burrow is your quarterback, obviously coming off a pretty gruesome knee injury. And he's playing in camp now. He's, not 100%, but he's looking to be. So some of my fears of him not getting back to form are becoming a little more alleviated. I think he's going to be okay. And this is starting to become a pretty exciting offense. I still value Joe Burrow as being one of those, fringe top 12 dynasty quarterbacks because of the fast pace that this offense is going to play at, because of the talent that he has in college. Basically, if you assume that he's going to get past this knee injury, now with the talent around him, And sure, maybe their offensive line isn't the best in the league, but they're still not quite as bad as everyone seems to believe they are. And the weapons around him are pretty much as good as anyone has, so I think he can absolutely step back into the league in 2021 and tear it up and be a very solid quarterback for your league, especially in Superflex. If you have him as your quarterback too, you are absolutely laughing. He is about the best quarterback too you could have.
Yep.
Then behind him is Brandon Allen. Not someone I'm excited about. They definitely don't have a lot of depth around him. He is absolutely just a guy.
The wide receivers for the Cincinnati Bengals. Talk about that first name up. It's Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase is going to come in and he's going to instantly be the one. He was physically dominant. I think he still will be. Mm-hmm. You see guys do this where they're enough of a physical specimen that they come in the league. And even those in the NFL, it's going to be the same type of Ja'Marr Chase. He's going to be doing some pretty amazing things with Joe Burrow. Obviously, they have the big LSU connection. It can't hurt. It cannot hurt to have your college quarterback who you broke records with. He's going to be absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So between him and you've got, of course, T. Higgins and you got Tyler Boyd. And T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd are both very good wide receivers. I would agree that the most likely scenario is that Ja'Marr Chase comes in and becomes the number one. I do, however, always want to remind people that we are playing a game with an incredibly high amount of variance. And as much as we all like to believe that one thing is going to happen and every very, very, very good prospect is going to hit, sometimes people don't. And sometimes Sammy Watkins happens or Josh Doctson happens. We have random players who just fall out of the league completely. We have players that...
N'Keal Harry.
Yeah, N'Keal Harry or Sammy Watkins. It's not like Sammy Watkins is absolute dust who fell out of the league in 3 years. Maybe you're just not the alpha.
Yeah.
And so as much as I love Ja'Marr Chase, I think he's going to tear it up. I also don't want to completely devalue these other two guys just solely based off of this false assurance that he is going to hit at the next level, because nobody is assured to hit at the next level. T. Higgins has become a value at this point. He had a great rookie season last year. His rookie season is everything you could hope for out of Ja'Marr Chase's rookie season. Like, that is what I'm hoping to see, is that type of production.
We had T. Higgins on our dynasty team, and he was great to have.
Yeah, we took Denzel Mims and T. Higgins back-to-back, and we were more excited about taking Denzel Mims.
Way more excited.
At this point, it's not even close.
Yeah.
Take Higgins way, way, way over Denzel Mims.
Mims is allegedly practicing with the twos. I don't want to get into that right now. Yeah. We'll talk about that later.
We actually already talked about their team, but...
I don't want to talk about it ever then.
Yeah, we'll see what type of legitimacy that has going into the season. But yeah, T. Higgins is a very good NFL wide receiver, and he's still going to eat going forward because, one, this feels like an offense that actually can support many very solid wide receivers, and two, I think there is a reasonable possibility that he stays as the number one, and his price right now is pretty much taking that possibility out of it.
Yeah.
Because, of course, everyone assumes that Ja'Marr Chase is going to be the wide receiver one, me included. So I just want you to keep your mind open to the possibility that he could still retain that number one role. Then Tyler Boyd, always underrated. It's not even just because Ja'Marr Chase has come in. I think it's these very elite slot receiver type of guys that, unless they have that Chris Godwin or Michael Thomas type season where they're catching so many passes that you can't ignore them anymore.
And I think the difference is touchdowns too. Like Godwin and Thomas, those guys get in the end zone. Tyler Boyd doesn't get in the end zone as much.
Mm-hmm. And other than those upper echelon guys, I think these slot guys who are very useful for fantasy just get a little bit ignored. And people don't really like it that they don't have that crazy high touchdown upside, just as you're saying. So he's one of those type of guys. We were talking about Landry earlier, that you can have him and just be comfortable starting him every week. And sure, he was also hit pretty hard by Ja'Marr Chase joining this wide receiver room, but this is a team that can use all three of these guys. And it's not like their tight end room is going to be taking a lot of receptions away. Basically, these three wide receivers are going to be the field all the time, and all three of them can see a decent amount of targets in this high-octane offense. The fourth wide receiver on this team is Auden Tate, and I just really don't think Auden Tate is going to see that much work. It's basically going to be the three of them on the field all the time. Joe Mixon is the starting running back for the Cincinnati Bengals, and for what feels like the eighth year in a row, he is a super high upside running back that you can take in the second round of your redraft leagues, startups. He has disappointed us as fantasy owners for multiple years in a row, mostly due to injury, but somewhat also, you know, he was a part of some pretty atrocious offenses. Think back to Ryan Finley and all these other quarterbacks that just haven't been able to support any running back production. But before he got hurt last year, Joe Mixon was very good. He especially had the one game where he absolutely went nuts.
He popped off.
But another thing to factor in is that Gio Bernard is now gone. So the report coming out recently, and everyone was pretty disappointed by this, was that they said that Joe Mixon is likely to split third downs with other guys. So, of course, everyone's hoping for that Christian McCaffrey-level guy who never leaves the field. Realistically, I saw this report as a good thing. I never really thought Joe Mixon was going to be that Christian McCaffrey-type guy who never leaves the field, and I hear, ooh, Joe Mixon's going to be on the field for some third downs?
Sure!
That's great! That's only upside, because he sure wasn't doing that before. They kept taking him off for Gio at every opportunity. So, I think Gio leaving is a great thing for him. I think he'll be on the field a lot more and hopefully catch more passes because he's such a good receiver that the upside is as high as it's ever been. This is the best offense he's ever been on. The question is, can he stay healthy enough to live up to that potential?
For the sake of our dynasty team? I hope so. In my pragmatic mindset, I don't think so.
I am always the one to never believe people will be hurt. I think Derrick Henry has as high, if not higher, of chance to get hurt as Joe Mixon. But it just feels like
he
keeps disappointing me. I can't get my hopes up that he's going to be this great running back one for me. But you have to recognize that in his range of outcomes is a player that plays a lot. In a league where running back by committee is becoming more and more common, he might not be in a committee. He can be that clear starter for a team. And also, this offense can be pretty damn good. I just think that it's a great situation to be in. What also helps is the players behind him. You have, as more of that rushing guy, Samaje Perine, Trevion Williams. They're fine if Joe Mixon does get hurt, which is possible.
They're there. You'll see them sometimes, maybe.
And one of these two guys, if Mixon goes down, is likely to be the starter and to get a lot of work. I probably guess it's P. Ryan. He's the one who came in ahead of Trevion Williams last year, but you never know that for sure. It could be either one. And then out of this rookie class, they came away with Chris Evans, a 6th-round pick, and Puka Williams, who was undrafted free agent. And these are more that Gio Bernard slot guy, who I expect one of them to be that player that...
And I would expect Chris Evans to be the player.
Just because they put draft capital into him, I would have to agree that they're talking about Mixon splitting some third downs. It's likely with one of these two, and likely Chris Evans. I do think Puka Williams is the player we liked better pre-draft, and if you're talking about someone who's incredibly late, he's worth a shot. But if I've got to pick one, it's definitely Chris Evans over him. But you have to recognize that his upside is Gio Bernard, which isn't super, super high.
He's fine from time to time.
And then the final position for the final team we'll be talking about today, the pretty gross tight ends for the Cincinnati Bengals.
Drew Sample, the number one tight end of the Bengals, I had high hopes for. He caught a touchdown pass.
I remember that. I was confused at the time, and I'm confused now. What is interesting about Drew Sample?
Well, no, I don't like him.
Okay.
He's a really elite blocking tight end.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And my expectation was, in the first couple of weeks of the season, when people were going, oh my goodness, this man can block. We need him on the field a ton. And then he caught a touchdown pass. I thought, there is a chance that if he's always on the field and he's playing well and impressing his coaches, they're going to get him more involved in the passing game. No, they just didn't.
Mm-hmm.
To be fair, why would you? Now you've got Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, even Auden Tate.
Yeah.
All those guys are better. This is not going to be an offense that funnels almost any meaningful percentage of passes to tight ends.
Yeah, we were talking about it with the Steelers, and that's with two tight ends that are a lot better than both the tight ends.
I think the Steelers tight ends for pass catching are 10 times better. This tight end room. Drew Sample is going to be the number one. He's primarily used as a blocker.
Mm-hmm.
He will occasionally catch passes.
The best receiver they have at tight end is CJ Uzama, who's, you know, you've seen him around the league for years. He's just...
Don't touch him.
I'd touch him before I'd touch Sample. I genuinely
would. Yeah, I would.
But I'm not that interested in either.
Yeah.
That's the main point. And then they also added Thaddeus Moss, who got cut from Washington, and I think he's a name mostly because of who his dad is, but he's not someone I'm looking for. But that's it, everyone. That is our divisional deep dive of the AFC North. Before we close out this episode, though, of course, we have our Dynasty Buy of the Week, and it's Toby's turn. If you would like to see all of the rules for this game, how we're doing it, what we're playing right here, you can look in the description below. But Toby, why don't you hit me with your first hint?
I'm 22, I'm 6'1", I'm 192 pounds, and I'm a second-year wide receiver.
That's a lot of info. Mm-hmm. 22, meaning they came out at 21, so that's already a decent amount of information. Second-year wide receiver, and he is 6'2", you said?
6'1", 192 pounds.
Man, this feels like one I have an actual legitimate chance on in guess number one.
You wish.
I do think, if Toby's giving me numbers like that, there's no way this is an obvious player who's, you know, top of mind.
Interesting.
I'm mostly thinking about the fact that this is a player who isn't super top of mind. He is around that height and weight, and I know he came out after his senior season last year, so that might put him around the age of 22 now, so I'm going to go with Jalen Reagor.
Good guess, but no. Jalen Reagor, you fool, is listed at 195.
I'm sorry.
Second hint. I'm a first-round draft pick talent.
Define draft pick talent.
I'm a talent that was drafted in the first round.
This player was drafted last year in the first round?
I'm a second year wide receiver. I'm a first round draft pick.
Okay, so I mean, I know the draft last year pretty well. The only wide receivers that were drafted in the first round last year were Ruggs, Judy, CeeDee Lamb, Jalen Reagor, Justin Jefferson. And I already know it's not two of those. So I'm pretty sure Henry Ruggs is not 6'2". Quite confident in that.
6'1".
6'1". I still am. I think he's shorter than that. I could be wrong, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe that'll be my guess next round. But I feel like CeeDee Lamb is also a bit heavier, so that leads me to guess that it is Jerry Jeudy.
Well done!
I have done it.
I've evidently given you too much information.
I could
from the weight alone, you were just on it like a hawk. I'm impressed.
I know my draft classes the last few years.
That was impressive. I was interested to see how well you knew the draft class, and you knew it perfectly, so well done. One hint that I do want to read out is that last year, yes, I finished 47th at the position, which isn't good. Jerry Jeudy had the 105th best catchable target rate. If you don't know what catchable target rate is, the easiest way to explain it is when a target is thrown to you, do you actually have a chance to catch it? Simple as that.
Is it airmailed?
Is it airmailed over your head? Is it way out left? Is it over the wrong shoulder?
I'd love to see what Darnell Mooney's catch.
Right. So he was the 105th best. So if you took the top three wide receivers from every single team, let's say, that's 96. Yeah. Okay. Jerry Jeudy was 105th. Drew Lock was doing this man a disservice. Yes, people were disappointed when Courtland Sutton went out and Jerry Jeudy had a chance to establish himself, and he didn't. But Courtland Sutton is an unrestricted free agent at the end of this year. Jerry Jeudy is an elite talent. He did absolutely show sparks, and I do not think Drew Lock is the future.
Teddy Bridgewater.
Teddy Bridgewater would be absolutely better for Jerry Jeudy.
I agree, he'd be better.
He would totally be better. He's going to put his numbers up, and Jerry Jeudy can get open. Jerry Jeudy has separation. Drew Lock is not going to be this man's quarterback for too much longer. Jerry Jeudy is too good a player to fade at this point in his career. Right now, though, he had a very underwhelming first year. There's some quarterback mystery. Courtland Sutton is now back, and that's exciting for a lot of people. Now is the time to go get Jerry Jeudy. I understand he'll still probably be expensive. He has that name. He was drafted in the first round. But now is the time to get him before he starts having a great season.
I feel like Jerry Jeudy just watches highlight tape of Justin Fields and wonders what could have been.
He's at home just on YouTube.
He's like, man, look at that ball. That went right to that receiver's hands. What the hell?
He's reading the Mooney quote. I smiled when he first threw me the pass.
Yeah, okay, I agree. I think that both Jerry Jeudy and Courtland Sutton are good buys right now. I think they're both undervalued, so it makes a lot of sense. There are certain owners that I don't think you can get Jeudy from for cheap at all. Like, there are just certain people that value him just as high because they loved him out of college. There seems to be a pretty dedicated community that thinks he's, you know, one of the best route runners in the league. Makes sense. People just love him. But realistically, the general vibe of his rookie season was a disappointment, whereas he looked quite good. And sure, he didn't capitalize completely on being the guy in year one, but he's a very good receiver who, weirdly, I just remembered, I forgot Brandon Ayuk earlier in the first round rookies. But anyway, could have been him too. I'm a dummy. Besides that.
If it was, and you just guessed the other five. Oh. What is it?
Yeah, I'm just beating myself up, and then I would remember, I'd be so mad. Anyway, yeah, I do think Jerry Jeudy is a very good player, and his situation will likely only get better. It's important to remember that Courtland Sutton could easily leave at the end of this year, and just that alone means his situation can only get better. I just expect that what you've seen so far from Jeudy is pretty much the floor, and so I would totally be willing to buy him now because I think the price will only go up in future years. That's it, everyone. That is our 62nd episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. We've really appreciated all of the love we've been getting lately on social media. Find us there on Twitter at Deep Dive Dynasty. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, we'd really appreciate it if you guys left us a review. That's it from us this week. We'll again talk to you guys next week. Thursday morning, we'll be dropping in your feeds. Thanks so much for listening, everyone. Thank you so much for being here, Toby.
Thank you, sir.
And have a good one, everyone.
Peace.